ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुः मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकम्। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरोः श्रीकृतापदकमलं श्रीगुरुं वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सगणारघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवम् श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सगणा ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च। हे कृष्णकरुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिकाकान्त राधाकान्त नमस्तुते। तप्तकाञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि श्रीहरिप्रिये। वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीअद्वैतगदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। हाउसफुल, यू कैन नॉट गो लिटिल फर्दर सो दैट कैन बी मोर पीपल अकोमोडेटेड। Yes, two people can come. Hello. You have the sound and everything.
I'm trying to connect on it, but I'm getting another laptop. I can't interface with the Mac. It's a different thing.
Oh, Mac is a different thing.
This interface is not connected. This is
hand-to-hand speaker. Oh, the speaker, okay. Yeah, I have to get another laptop. Hare Krishna. Few days back, I gave a talk in the university about virtual reality is in Krishna consciousness. You know, in that reference, we were trying to point out that the perfection cannot be achieved by a human being on the material sense perception. Perfection cannot be achieved by human being on their own endeavor, and especially in the material pursuit, there is no possibility. Why? Because we have four defects. In human being there are four defects. First defect is that our senses are limited. Their perception is limited. You cannot make the judgment from a limited source for something which is beyond your comprehension or unlimited thing. So, we have to put up a boundary amongst us. Rather than wasting time that, oh, we can collectively put our intelligence together and then do come to perfection. That is something very erroneous. Too many imperfect senses are coming together to make too many blunders. So it's not like that because we will be having a desire to do wonders in perfections, you know. But even collectively, our senses cannot reach the unfathomable eternity. What to speak of even common sense things, that people are completely mesmerized or that they can do wonders. You know, in previous times the yogis were doing so many feats, alright? Just by, without any contrivances that they needed. Computer is another kind of, they get bewilderment. But actually it's nothing, it's storehouse of memory. And you just pull out at your fingertips. Alright? The brain is naturally a computer system. And it stores so much information. Do you know how many gigabytes the brain can store? You'll be surprised. And there is no limit. Only thing is that brain cells, when they stop functioning because of limited area, in the old age people get loss of memory. There are short circuits. We were talking about short circuits. And the flashlight and the brain too, you know, because there are synapses and the nerves that they get broken, that goes a flash. So the point is that our senses are so limited. Even the animals, they are very powerful in their senses. Then a dog can hear heartbeat of about 50 feet away. And especially a trained dog like German Shepherd or Alsatian, they are supposed to protect their master. So they are trained in such a way that they can recognize who is excited, who is not excited. The one who is excited, the dog has eyes on him. So as soon as if he is going to put up a foul play, he will jump on him. That is the nature of the trait. The senses are very powerful. In other ways, an eagle can see 2 miles away, soaring, or where is a little mouse or a serpent that is his food. His eyes are so powerful. The deer has built-in sonar and radar system. Their sense of smell is very powerful. You name it. Our senses are not matching anywhere. So a human being, even though highly developed consciousness, he has to rest his entire judgment upon the limited senses. Right? So, we have imperfect senses. Therefore, whatever we make is also imperfect in nature. Second thing is that because we have imperfect senses and because we have limited perceptions, then it is erroneous. Means sometimes we have to make mistakes. Mistakes is but human. To err is human. Then third one is that we have our ego, which is born out of ignorance, has tendency to keep the individuality, so he does two more mistakes. First, it comes under illusion. Even though if you have in the daytime an experience of snake going, but even at the night, if it is a rope lying before you, you will tend to think of snake. And you will be afraid. Alright? That is because of illusion. And fourth one, because the ego is keeping the individuality intact, even though it is in ignorance, it will tell something which is not true. That is, to cheat or lie is the fourth defect. Nobody is honest. Nobody can swear that he is honest. Only somebody else can give or vouch that this guy is an honest, and we take her for granted. So four defects in human being. Can you imagine how come we can rely upon either an individual or collective thoughts to be true? Science is the first and foremost thing that we tend to believe, but it's such a hoax. You know, today we lost one of our god brother who was pioneering in scientific research, and he wrote the Forbidden Archaeology. Richard Thompson is a PhD, and his initiated name is Sadaput Das. Now Sadaput Das went back to Godhead, you know, because Krishna takes care of his devotees. But he was pioneer to put up the ulterior paradigm of conscious studies and other things. Then he did go to the archives in the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C. to get a lot of material that are not published, but they are preserved. Especially attempt to, and they were very successful, to eradicate the illusion of Darwin theory. They went and looked to the evidences that they were hidden. They never come for exposure for common people. These are the evidence of controversies that created. For example, in the origin of man, the original skull that was found first in Australia is called Australopithecus. Then in the Himalayan territory also called Shivapithecus. And then they found probably about 20 years back some in Africa. Afropithecus, and so many different names and nomenclature they started giving. Then again they were having citation of Yeti, that is a snowman. And in Canada they cited something called Bigfoot. So many things are unexplainable to them. They have photographs at the maximum, but yet they cannot get. But in the archaeological aspect, that in different periods, like Jurassic period and other period, where they take the excavations into consideration, that they found in different period the skull of the monkey or the ancestors of the monkey along with human skull. So how dare Darwin can tell that man is coming from or evolved from monkeys? What is the reason? Simultaneously, and this was Richard Thompson, Sadaput Das, he exposed everything in this Forbidden Archaeology. He, along with Dhritakarma Prabhu, he's also a doctorate, and they went on NBC 1 week session on the mysteries of men. You know, that series, and we have the videos and other things. Those who are of science, you know, background, it is for your education. But here we will try to give you the idea that because of these four defects, there is a big conspiracy behind it, you know, and up to national level. And the first and foremost, the most celebrated controversy is man going on moon. Alright? You must have seen the videos or TV photographs or whatever it is. But how far these are true, what not. People have made research and they found out so many things that is startling. Right? But otherwise, you know, the campaign, propaganda, and all of the techniques is to sell one which is not true. So, if you are the students of reality, don't depend upon virtual reality. Depend upon factual reality. Otherwise, even in the beginning stages of Krishna consciousness, you will realize the virtual means almost nearly happening right in this life. That is Krishna consciousness. It is elevating your consciousness. But to go back home, back to Godhead, you have to practice in such a discipline that it becomes factual. Don't depend upon virtual. Virtual is coming to close, very near experiences. But even a sentimentalist can have virtual reality experiences, which we do not promote. Rather, we be strict in discipline and put Krishna consciousness on the scientific anvil and prove it. Because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, the science of Krishna consciousness is being taught to Arjuna. You check out the ninth chapter, the most confidential knowledge about Krishna consciousness, Krishna is telling to Arjuna. Only thing is that it does not depend upon the four defects. But it depends upon two major things. These two factors one has to important. Bhakto asi sakha cheti rahasyam hetad uttama. Arjuna, I am telling you this most confidential knowledge because you are a devotee. And sakha means you are related to me as a friend. So, to become bhakta means to become non-envious of Krishna. If you put faith on Darwin, you have equal right to put faith on Krishna and his teachings. Because this is based on factual observation, truth, and scientific. So, Krishna tells, Rajavidya Rajaguhyam Pavitram Nidam Uttamam Pratyaksha Avagamam Dharvyam Susukham Kartum Avyayam. These are the scientific parameters. What does it say? This knowledge is the king of knowledge. And it is exposing the most secret of the reality. It is purifying. Means there won't be any illusion or doubts or anything. You will be completely pure in nature. Then uttama means it will remove your ignorance. This ignorance removal is very important. When the ignorance is removed, then our false ego will be smashed. Udgataha tamah iti uttam. One that transcends the mode of ignorance is called uttam. Uttam means best. But we translate very commonly as best. But why it is best? Because it is pulling us out from the ignorance. So, pratyaksha avagamam. When an experiment is performed, stage-wise, when all the parameters are served, then under the care of a bona fide spiritual master or a demonstrator, this process can be systematically performed, and that yields the result which is observable. Alright? It is not for taking for granted, believe me or not. Bhagavad Gita is not a question of belief. It's a question of scientific experiment. So sukham kartum. Even it is so much pleasant that everybody becomes enthusiastic. Enthusiastic because they get pleasure. Now, in ordinary work, I don't think anybody is getting pleasure. There, when they realize their check, then some so-called pleasure is there because he can go and spend it for sense gratification. Right? So, but here it is, susukham kartum. Even while performance, the happiness comes. And kartum avyayam means the result is a permanent asset. More you spend, more it will increase. So, where would you find such factual results? It's not a make-believe thing, but perform. Chanting Hare Krishna, following four regulative principles, you know. These are the practical ways to perform that particular process. So, the idea is that if we rely too much on the so-called bombardment of the big shots and big governments and, you know, then don't get dissuaded. It's such a false propaganda of limited senses that they do not know anything beyond titillizing the senses. So today we are going to expose you to such a big controversy. Then you decide. So you can put on and watch this movie. These are the biblical quotes. This video has been made through BBC in London.
Of the human heart. It is said that the first iniquity of free will began even before the maiden pilgrimage from the embryo, preceding the very creation of the earth itself, in the forelife of souls in the heavenly realms. The dawn of warfare, some believe, was initiated by a fallen angel whose trespass against God was pride. In ancient Babylonia, in an age so long ago that the exact millennium remains in question, the Tower of Babel began construction. It was to be the single greatest achievement of the human race. A tower so tall that its summit would reach the heavens, and by it prove to the world that their race was superior. It would be God's irony that it would never be finished. Time passed, nations fell, a machine age emerged, and once again the ingenuity of the species which held dominion over all others unveiled what was at the time the most monumental accomplishment ever imagined, the largest machine yet constructed, and automation so mammoth and so revered, even before its first demonstration, that its only befitting name was Titanic. On April 10th, 1912, it set sail. It was boasted to be the ship that God himself could not sink. It would be God's irony that the very element that was meant to keep it afloat would cause it to sink. Water, frozen water, in the form of an iceberg. Not even one voyage did it complete. And then the next age embarked into the annals of human history. Perhaps the last age. The space age. Competition for victor was unparalleled. Powerful nations spent billions in unabashed rivalry to outdo the other. The Soviet Union launched the first orbiting satellite, the first animal, the first man. They had logged 500% more hours in space than the United States. And in June of 1969, they launched an unmanned probe to the moon to retrieve the first soil sample from another world, just 1 month before Apollo 11. That's how close the race was. Had their unmanned probe not crash-landed into the lunar surface, the first moon rock brought back to Earth would have been by the Soviet Union. Richard Nixon, president at the time, had this to say about the latest work of the human hand. It is the greatest week since creation. The greatest event since the laying of the foundation of the seas. Since the origin of the universe itself. Since the design and formation of the delicate human eye through which all these things are perceived. Was a flying machine with its two passengers landing on its closest celestial neighbor and returning from where it came. Perhaps again, God's irony lies somewhere within this great boast of humankind. The building of the tallest tower for the sole purpose of standing out among the races was never finished. The machine that was so great that it was said to be untouchable by even God never completed its first voyage. And finally, the crowning achievement of humankind, the greatest boast of the species, the event in human history most associated with pride in our own accomplishments, landing on the moon. 20 years later, and years behind schedule, the same space program couldn't put into Earth orbit a telescope with a lens that focused. And yet 2 decades earlier, a mission 100 times more complicated worked on its first occasion. With close scrutiny of the motives of the zealous Nixon administration, a critical examination of the entirely government-controlled press coverage, and newly discovered footage of the crew of Apollo 11 staging part of their mission, we wish to detail what may come to be the greatest government conspiracy of all time. A funny thing happened on the way to the moon.
Straight to the moon we do. How would you say we stand in relation to the Russians, and do you think we can ever catch up?
I'm convinced that in the space field, the Russians are ahead of us, particularly in large weightlifting capability, and that at the moment the problem is not so much to catch up, but first build up the working speed that they have already demonstrated. After we are running as fast as they do, there's still a considerable gap to close, and only the future will tell whether we'll manage to close that gap.
We cannot and will not ever get into this race as we should, so long as all of our objectives are short-term objectives. We've got to have no finite end to our objectives. The end of our objectives should be as far as we can see at any given time. But right now, we need a 10 to 12 year program that has as its ultimate goal the man domination of space. And if we don't, we're going to be gone.
I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal before this decade is out of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the earth.
We must assure our preeminence in the peaceful exploration of outer space, focusing on an expedition to the moon in this decade.
T-minus 60 seconds and counting. We pass T-minus 60. 55 seconds and counting. Neil Armstrong reported back when he received the good wishes. Thank you very much. We know it will be a good flight. Good luck and Godspeed. 40 seconds away from the Apollo 11 liftoff. All the second stage tanks now pressurized. 35 seconds and counting. We are still go with Apollo 11. 30 seconds and counting. Astronauts report it feels good. T-minus 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start. 6.
Of 1,000 miles and extending an additional 25,000 miles lay lethal bands of radiation called the Van Allen radiation belts. Every space mission in history with humans on board, from both the United States and Soviet Union, from the first in 1961 to the present, has been well below this deadly radiation field. Mercury, Gemini, Soyuz, Skylab, the Space Shuttle, all maintained altitudes well below 1,000 miles. All except Apollo. The more experienced Soviets spent 100 hours in space for every 20 hours of the US. In order to survive the hour and a half journey through this radiation field necessary to reach the moon and return, solid lead shielding between the astronauts and the exposure outside would be required. The mammoth Saturn V rocket used by Apollo was already 35 stories tall and weighed as much as a battleship. additional tonnage in the form of a lead barrier completely surrounding the crew members would have made it impossible for the vehicle to get off the ground. That is why the Soviets, though more advanced, only sent an unmanned probe to the moon. The Apollo spacecraft's narrowest shielding was less than 1/8 of an inch of light aluminum. In 1998, the space shuttle flew to an altitude of 350 miles, one of its highest altitudes ever, hundreds of miles below the beginning of a field of radiation that was so severe that the astronauts inside of their shielded spacecraft and inside of their shielded spacesuits saw flashes of light with their eyes shut that they described as shooting stars due to radiation penetrating first the shuttle's shielding, then their spacesuit shielding, then their skulls, and finally the retinas of their closed eyes. As a result, CNN issued the following report, noting NASA's unpredicted surprise. The radiation belt surrounding Earth may be more dangerous for spacewalking astronauts than previously believed. Scientists say the phenomena known as the Van Allen belts can spawn killer electrons when the Earth's magnetic field changes. These electrons that are being studied could have an important effect not only on satellites, which has happened in the past, but could also affect the astronauts by creating large doses of radiation that could influence their health. The electrons can penetrate through various materials, including spacesuits, and can pass through, in fact, the walls of the space station, and can create high charges deep inside of these objects. President Kennedy, a man of political, not scientific background, set the irrevocable goal of landing a man on the moon by the end of the 1960s, just days after America's first astronaut had spent a mere 16 minutes in space, not even achieving a single orbit around the Earth.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing, not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
We take an additional risk by making it in full view of the world. But as shown by the feat of astronaut Shepard, this very risk enhances our status when we are successful.
The technology necessary to launch the massive Saturn V rocket and an intercontinental ballistic missile is 95% similar. When the Soviet Union launched mankind's first satellite, Sputnik, in 1957, there was grave concern that they had mastered space ahead of the United States and might use this advantage to launch a first nuclear strike from an orbit high above North America. When they also put the first animal in space, then the first man in space, then achieved the first spacewalk, the first crew of three, and the first ever of two simultaneously orbiting spacecrafts, concern turned to fear and then horror as America watched their communist enemy achieve all these firsts with no hope in sight of ever catching up.
President, a member of Congress said today that he was tired of seeing the United States second to Russia in the space field. I suppose he speaks for a lot of others. What is the prospect that we will catch up with Russia and perhaps surpass Russia in this field?
However tired anybody may be, and no one is more tired than I am, it is a fact that it's going to take some time, and I think we have to recognize it. They secured these large boosters, which have led to their being first in Sputnik and led to their first putting their man in space. We are, I hope, going to be able to carry out our efforts with due regard to the problem of the life of the man involved this year, but that we are behind.
If it was impossible to better the Soviets in the space race, which was really a race of technological armaments, what could be done? How could America offset the threat of superior weaponry? Throughout the history of rivalry and war, astute generals of lesser armies than their counterparts have used deceit and misinformation as a method to achieve victory. In World War II, for example, columns of inflatable tanks were placed at locations afar from Normandy to draw German forces away from the real location of invasion. The Star Wars missile defense program rigged tests to make it seem more advanced than it really was. That's the conclusion of the General Accounting Office. The aim was to fool the Soviet Union about U.S. military readiness during the Cold War. Certainly, it was not possible to fool just the Soviets about U.S. strategic capability in the 1960s, while somehow informing 200 million Americans of the truth secretly. In order for them to believe the United States had the capability to go to the moon, everyone would have to believe it. Furthermore, the pride of a nation was at stake, and the goal of a martyr, not to mention the growing unrest domestically of a government throwing tens of thousands of lives away in a foreign war riddled with contradiction and ambiguity. In addition, the Apollo program had already spent billions of dollars. If it failed to achieve its goal with such an investment, it would indeed be a large and bitter pill for the taxpayers to swallow. The cost of the program, whose sole goal was to be the first to plant a flag on the lifeless rock just outside the Earth, if adjusted for inflation to the 21st century, was $135 billion. With a profit margin of just 7%, this would be equal to over $9 billion profit going to the privileged contractors chosen by their friends at NASA. If the machinery was in fact only achieving Earth orbit, as other earlier missions had already done, then the completion and functionality of the other components would not have been as important, and even more profit would have been made. $135 billion could feed 2 million people for their entire lives. It could also buy 2 million two-bedroom houses. Yet how could such an undertaking be kept secret, and for such a long time? To the latter, one needs only to remember that an unsolved riddle 6 years older, the assassination of President Kennedy, still daunts the minds of the vast majority of Americans. As a parent of a conspiracy, as his assassin being assassinated himself, the truth of the matter has still escaped history. In keeping a secret of the magnitude of the Apollo missions being fraudulently created, one turns to the Manhattan Project for comparison. Surreptitiously building the first nuclear bomb during the early to mid-1940s involved 129,500 people over a three-year period. Yet the secret did not get out. A quarter century later, the art and technology of espionage inevitably improved, narrowing dramatically the number of players in the know of a large clandestine operation. Just 1 year before the first mission to the moon, NASA launched the Tetra satellite, specifically designed to simulate flight data coming from the moon, so that the ground crews could rehearse the landing, much as the astronauts did in their own simulations. Had it not supposedly fallen back to Earth, all that would have been needed during the actual flight would be a repeat of one of these computer programs, with a few original variations, transmitted to the satellite for rebroadcast to Houston. Scores of computers and their deceived operators on the ground would then receive prearranged information, including the alleged location, altitude, and fuel consumption of the spacecraft, as if it were descending to the moon's surface. If the Soviets tried to find the actual location of an Apollo crew in the hundreds of thousands of miles surrounding the Earth and the moon, it would be tantamount to trying to find a rowboat in the Atlantic Ocean. The fact that the Apollo program was so departmentalized, with various construction and test sites around the country, meant that only a few people saw the whole picture. And for the first time ever, there was no independent press coverage of such an historical event. Whatever pictures and sound were distributed to the public were strictly controlled and previewed by the federal government. They were then disseminated unchecked until this hour. For who would realize that the unthinkable was not only possible, but absolutely true? What do they tell us? On three separate occasions, our office asked NASA's Public Relations Department for every single picture of an astronaut on the surface of the moon, just during the maiden voyage of Apollo 11. Many duplicates were sent. In all, fewer than 20 pictures were found, including first-hand investigation on site at the agency's vaulted archives. Quite surprising, considering the historical significance of the event. These very photographs are the same ones circulated year after year on anniversary commemorations. It is estimated that in just the first 60 minutes on the moon, motivated by the tenuous nature of the circumstances, many more exposures could have been expediently taken. Also surprising is the scarcity of photographs of the mission's chief pioneer, Neil Armstrong, the greatest achievement in human history and of the man whose first step echoed around the world, dawning a new age of scientific enlightenment. There is only one full-body picture of him on the moon besides this ghostly reflection. This one, taken by an automatic camera mounted on the side of the lunar module. Perhaps he feared liability should the whole conundrum later become unraveled. Perhaps he has forgotten that he attested to the authenticity of the event with his signature on this plaque engraved by the federal government. In fact, in the more than 30 years since the event, aside from NASA's initial press conference and the occasional brief anniversary remarks where few questions were permitted, he has never given one on-camera interview to anyone, ever. From an analytical standpoint, photographic anomalies have to be sought out with an understanding of lighting and shadows. The most straightforward is simple. When objects are lit solely by the sun, as all the scenes on the moon were said to be, after all, lighting equipment was not only impractical, it was unnecessary in bright sunlight, then all shadows, regardless of the landscape, will run parallel with one another and never intersect, as shown by this example. In these seldom seen photographs, obtained from a rarely used auxiliary NASA archival site, it is clear that these scenes were lit with artificial light. These shadows, which are cast at different angles, are evidence that a second light source is being used. In addition, the sun would not cause an isolated hotspot like this, only an artificial light would. Again, intersecting shadows and another hotspot. And again. And again. It is simply impossible for this picture to have been taken with sunlight on the moon. Here, the shadows are shown to be as black as pitch. And yet here, completely in the shadow, the astronaut is lit up like a Christmas tree. How can this be? Or this, on the shadow side of the lunar module. In this magnification of an Apollo photograph, a rock, very likely a papier-mâché prop because of the crease here, is categorized with the letter C. In later releases of the same picture, the letter is gone, probably airbrushed out. Here, a crosshair, which was burned directly into the image from the film plate, and thus should always appear on top of the objects in the photograph, appears behind the object in this scene, clearly revealing a composite of two pictures into one. Someone apparently forgot to create a burn crater underneath the lunar module's 10,000-pound thrust engine, despite the fact that during ground tests, there was a real concern for the vehicle falling into the hole the engine created as it descended. Here is a Norman Rockwell depiction drawn just 2 years earlier, based on the latest specifications and scientific data. In these enlargements, it looks as though the lunar module was simply placed there, not even one speck of moon dust on the landing pod. As a result, all subsequent flights had to have the same discrepancy, which was explained away by the effect of no atmosphere. And what about stars? On the moon, with no atmosphere, they must have been quite a sight to behold. Yet there is seldom any mention of them, if ever, by any of the astronauts on any of the missions. Undoubtedly, creating a mural with all the constellations properly placed in the sky would have been virtually impossible to create accurately, much less realistically. A competent amateur astronomer would have been able to call attention to the slightest error in measurement. The answer? Not to talk about the stars. Ever. In their post-flight press conference, it was the only question to which Neil Armstrong responded with an absence of memory.
When you looked up at the sky, could you actually see the stars and the solar corona in spite of the glare?
We were never able to see stars from the lunar surface or on the daylight side of the moon by eye without looking through the optics. I don't recall during the period of time that we were photographing the solar corona what stars we could see.
Later, though, Michael Collins would remember seeing the elusive stars and wrote about them in expeditions to the moon. It seems his memory improved the older he got. Why don't stars appear in any of the photographs? Simply because the proper, mostly closed exposure setting for the camera's iris set that way to compensate for the bright sunlight on the moon's surface completely diminished the faintness of relatively distant specks of diminutive light. This answer is true. It does not, however, explain why they never took any pictures of the stars by themselves, with an exposure setting perfect for them. While they took three automobiles to the moon, they never took a photographic telescope. Had they done so, they would have been able to see farther into the universe than had ever before been realized. If they had taken a telescope and were not actually on the moon, they would have had to concoct undiscovered galaxies that might one day prove to be non-existent. The cost of the three moon rovers in 21st century currency? Nearly $60 million each. Though they had fewer parts than a Jeep. Where was all this money going? Then there's the flag, blowing in the wind at least twice on the atmosphereless moon. We can only guess that most of the missions were staged inside for fear of possible aerial or satellite reconnaissance from an unfriendly nation. The backpacks, designed for 1/6 gravity, must have had the cooling systems removed to allow for movement without falling over. With very near and hot studio lighting, that left one hot astronaut inside. Assuming that it was the astronauts inside, after all, their faces were always covered. The necessary mammoth amounts of air conditioning were probably responsible for the air current. Here the editor cuts to a still shot of the flag, just as the effect becomes noticeable. Here it is unchecked. This rare clip, attained decades ago, was never re-released with the inevitable increase in experience and scrutiny. To demonstrate 1/6 gravity, a bouncy, floaty feel to the astronauts' moves would be similarly achieved with relative simplicity. Slow motion. You are viewing the scenes as they aired more than 30 years ago. Now let's look at them with the speed doubled. It becomes discernible that they are, in fact, in Earth's gravity and are no more leaving the ground than they would on Earth. It is clear from these rarely seen color television pictures that the crew of Apollo 11 brought a high-resolution color video camera with them on their mission. Yet the only pictures broadcast live from the moon's surface were these from a low-definition black-and-white camera. In fact, the networks complained because in addition to this, they were forced to shoot the images second generation off of a projection TV of the technology of 30 years ago and were not even allowed to take a direct feed, which further degraded the quality and clarity of the images. Perhaps this was precisely what NASA and the federal government had in mind. After all, it was a first, regardless of where they were. Better to open up their debut mission with fuzzy pictures and numerous blackouts, rather than show too much revealing detail of a false scene that was yet unproven. And finally, the element that seals their fate. Of all the footage of Apollo 11 requested from NASA over a 5-year period, one gem was discovered just before the completion of this documentary. An old reel received by mistake. It contains the raw or unedited footage of the crew of Apollo 11, Michael Collins, Edwin Aldrin Jr., and Neil Armstrong, staging part of their mission for nearly an hour in living color, with exceptionally clear behind-the-scenes audio of conversations discussing the techniques used to achieve a disingenuous picture depicting the Earth at a distance, in order to falsely demonstrate their far journey from it and their ability to survive passing through the Van Allen radiation belts. It cannot be misconstrued that this staging was done for some other reason prior to the mission, for the reel itself is slated and dated July 18th, 19th, and 20th, 1969. the very days of the mission when they were said to be approaching and achieving lunar orbit. Furthermore, it is apparent they are in genuine zero gravity aboard the actual spacecraft, necessary to convince the mass media of their authenticity, just not any further than Earth orbit, as you will see. In this never-before-seen-or-heard footage, not only is the radio conversation between the astronauts and Houston Control audible, there is a secondary, private conversation taking place between the crew and a third confidential party, prompting the astronauts with what to say, when to speak, and how to effectively manipulate the camera to achieve the desired misleading effect. NASA claims that the Houston transmissions were the only ones taking place with the astronauts. Listen now as Houston Control initiates a conversation with the crew, only to find them too preoccupied with the behind-the-scenes trickery to respond. Moments pass and the oversight is picked up on by the clandestine third party, who quickly prompts them with, "Talk." Immediately, Neil Armstrong speaks. Attempting to create is the Earth at a distance to demonstrate their far journey from it and their ability to survive passing through the Van Allen radiation belts. Understand, too, that only about 20 seconds of this raw footage was ever broadcast to the public, and these conversations discussing their deception were believed to be private until now. Here they discuss that these television transmissions were in fact not broadcast live as everyone believed. They were first screened and edited for playback later. The fact that they have turned out the lights and have blocked out sunlight from entering the spacecraft through the other windows as to not cause any reflected light to fall onto the spacecraft's wall in the foreground. The reason this was done is so that the truth of the matter would not be revealed. It is this. Though the federal government would have you believe that this is a view of Earth from a distance out of the spacecraft's window as it nears the moon, it is not. What they have ingeniously done is placed the camera at the back of the spacecraft and centered the lens on a circular window in the foreground, outside of which it is completely filled with the Earth in low orbit. The circumference of the window then appears to be the diameter of the Earth at a distance, with the darkened walls of the spacecraft appearing to be the blackness of space around it. That is why they wanted the interior dark and blocked out the sun from entering through the other windows. Here you can see the extruded window, probably 2 inches thick at the bottom. This is because the Earth's shine is coming in at a downward angle. It also causes the Earth to appear to be an irregularly shaped circle, for you are seeing the outside of the window at the bottom and the inside of the window at the top, which together form 2 different sized halves of a circle. Subsequently, this take was never used. As they perfected the shot, a crescent-shaped piece of black material was inset slightly into the window to create the illusion of the Earth's terminator line dividing night and day. It is uncannily convincing. During this segment, intended to be edited and played back later for the worldwide television audience, dated July 18, 1969, Neil Armstrong condemns himself as he states that he is 130,000 miles out, or halfway to the moon, as the NASA flight log also states on this date, when he is in reality in low Earth orbit of a few hundred miles. Segment, also intended to air after review, Neil Armstrong Armstrong falsely explains to the viewers how the shot is attained by putting the camera's lens to the window's glass, as it would have to be if they were the claimed distance away from the Earth.
We only have one now window that has a view of the Earth, and it's filled up with the TV camera.
If the window was completely filled up with a TV camera, as he stated, then an astronaut's arm would not be able to get between the camera and the window, as it obviously does here in this outtake.
South America becomes invisible, so beyond the Terminator, it's like the shadow.
You can also notice how the astronaut operating the camera reacted to the mistake by attempting to pan away from it. This is a segment that they believe wasn't even being recorded, much less suitable for broadcast, for the lens was being zoomed out and the scene was being changed to that of an interior of the astronauts at work, and apparently the stop button popped back up on the recorder without notice. Here is the diffused work light that they used to see camera controls, but not throw light onto the spacecraft's wall. Here they removed part of the crescent insert. Iris is opened up and you can see the real location of the camera and the very bright and near Earth out the window. Here is the slate for the 19th of July and the same shot of trickery on the 19th of July and then the 20th and the same misleading shot on the 20th. Later that evening they were said to be walking on the moon. How can this be when they were in Earth orbit only 9 hours earlier and the moon is some 3 days' journey away? Furthermore, if they genuinely went to the moon, why would they be faking any part of it? Why this trickery with the window? By faking being halfway to the moon, it becomes apparent that they did so because they could not even go halfway. It thus confirms that the stumbling block to their success was the lethal radiation of the Van Allen radiation belts. Since the same equipment was used on the subsequent missions in the 40 months that followed, none of them could have gone to the moon. They only increased their proficiency at staging them. When some TV viewers of the second manned mission to the moon telephoned the networks complaining that reruns of I Love Lucy were being interrupted, it became clear that for the taxpayers, once was enough. But it wasn't enough for the government and contractors. Billions of dollars of pure profit went with each return. How coincidental that the following mission would have the element of life and death jeopardy. Apollo 13. Now the public would take going to the moon more seriously and be reconnected with the drama. We now realize that perhaps the reason Neil Armstrong has never given an on-camera interview is because he doesn't want to lie anymore. What threats may have been made upon such honorable men or their families to possess their reluctant cooperation and later ill feelings towards perpetuating this still darkened hour in American history? NASA's highest-ranking official, James Webb, resigned without explanation just days before the first Apollo mission. Why, when he was on the threshold of achieving the greatest accomplishment of his career? All three Apollo 11 astronauts also resigned shortly after their return. On the 25th anniversary of the event, in 1994, Neil Armstrong made a rare public appearance and held back tears as he spoke these brief cryptic remarks before the next generation of taxpayers as they toured the White House.
Today we have with us a group of students among America's best. To you we say, we've only completed the beginning. That is undone. There are great ideas undiscovered, breakthroughs available to those who can remove one of truth's protective layers.
He is that layer. Perhaps someday soon, with the uncovering of this footage and its meaning, the true patriots of America will rise up or come forward and free the citizens and themselves from the sin that so easily entangles and from a federal government that needs to have the gangrene cut off. Even if the government's destruction would come from the truth, then it is not worthy to stand, and its betterment would inevitably follow. All of us are mortal. All of us will die. Perhaps the seeking of a clear conscience before that hour will motivate the truth into the light. Perhaps as citizens we should offer amnesty for this and other crimes of history, for facts from those involved before the truth perishes with them. Why must we wait until the year 2017 to open the Kennedy assassination files? Perhaps they will not even be opened then, for the law that reluctantly stipulates their release says so with this clause, quote, with the exception of documents certified for continued postponement by the President. Whoever believes the citizens to be too immature for the truth are too immature for power. The truth will always set us free.
What do you think now? Did they ever go? What do you think? Can you rely upon the so-called science? Look at the economy. It's all faked up. Krishna consciousness will put us on the right factual reality. So you are lucky that there are so many episodes of conspiracies, you know, where the government is involved. In the year 2000, when the United Nations sponsored the first religious conference So many leaders from India, and I represented ISKCON from India, and Bhakti Vigyan Maharaj represented from Russia, and we saw real fiasco there. Ted Turner, the owner of CNN, he put up a lot of money and he distributed videos that we also have in possession about the failure of armed race between America and United States, Russia. People are so easy that at the slightest provocation they want to trigger happy. Trigger happy means they can put on the switch to devastate the whole world. So this video was prepared by them in order to awaken the imminent disaster if we don't do anything. So they put the onus on the religious organizations, the major religions of the world, and put pressure on them. Kofi Annan spoke that as United Nations we failed in our attempt to eradicate poverty, clean up the pollution, stop the war, and the religious cooperation. So now the religious leaders take the onus, the burden on their head to help, because we failed. This was in the conference that he said. But the Christians already put up a heavy propaganda and created resolution, before even the conference starts. They declared, when Pope Paul came to Delhi in early January that year, 2000, and after that, in a couple of years, he died. But he said in Delhi that in the first millennium, we conquered the Europe. In second, we conquered America and Africa. In the third millennium, now we are going to reap the harvest in Southeast Asia. The domination of power, domination of religion by hook or crook is so artificial that the purpose of religion is never served. To religos means to yoke with or connect with the Supreme. But when man interferes with his own whims, cannot take up the commandment of the Lord, so that he creates a veil of conspiracy all around him, and somehow or another it is getting exposed. But at whose cost? At the cost of humanity. So live a life of reality. Serve the absolute truth as exposed in Srimad Bhagavatam. Because we are real people, then we must try to live a life of reality, not virtual reality, factual reality. You can't depend upon this external, however glamorous the world may look. It's a fake situation. It's a make-believe escapism from the four problems of life: birth, death, old age, and disease. And Krishna is advising, dukkha dosha anudarshanam, anudarshan, you must make a solution, eternal solution for it. So that is what Krishna consciousness movement is trying to bring us. It's not simply chanting, but there is everything in chanting. It wakens up our sleeping soul, our sleeping consciousness, and put it right on the anvil of reality. Then shape up our character. You know, we should live as it is expected in the Vedic culture, for the pleasure of the Lord, the pleasure of the Supreme Reality. We are related because we are part and parcel of that reality. So therefore, it's our obligation to make every effort to live a life of reality and become example to others, preachers. There are so many students, you know, who are not getting proper exposure. You know, they are misled. Thank you very much. Every time when I finish, they want to interfere. Hari Bol. Glosha Prabhupada. Program end karo Chaturi Varma. Dattaman, 10 minute karo. 10 minute karo. Hari Bol. So, it's not a religion, it's not a make-believe thing. You know, the so-called misguided life and ignorance is a make-believe thing. People want to become happy by Hollywood style, Bollywood style. But it's such a fake thing. It is throwing us away from far distant from the reality. It's all glamour. Money, economy, you know, people make business right out of robbing innocent people. But why they are innocent? The whole world is of cheater and cheated, Srila Prabhupada said. When there are foolish people, you know, thugs will be there who are ready to rob them. So at least you are fortunate. So take up the process of Krishna consciousness and always remain awake, always remain aware of the Supreme Reality by which you will be able to know everything. Kasmin bhagavo yasmin vigyatam sarvamevam vigyatam bhavanti. By knowing one, you will know everything. You know, nobody can fool you anymore. So, we have to spread intelligently, convincing the people. You know. Who will teach this in India? You know. Did you have any iota that you will come and listen to this challenging approach to our religion? Then. And it is spreading like wildfire. Young people like you who have brain, they understand. Older people, forget it. We hardly have any hope. Can you teach new tricks to the dogs? The old dogs cannot learn. Right? Because they are too much stuck up, you know, conditioned. But because we have thinking power, you know, remembering power, and your consciousness is blooming like fresh flower, if we offer to Krishna, do we offer stale flower, old flower? No, only fresh flowers have to be offered. So our lives are like, you know, blooming. And Krishna will be pleased. Thank you very much. Anybody has any question?
Raj, isn't that these astronauts, was it that they passed away being, they died?
No, that is in Apollo 13.
Oh, I see. very mysteriously they died. Right?
Of course. They were killed. There are more astronauts in a particular time and framework. They disappear. Because they have to fake up. And it was against their consciousness. Even the program organizer managers, you saw that, they resigned. Just weeks before the thing was supposed to. And it's all political faking.
The president was also killed that time? The last
year. That is a mysterious killing. Did you see his wife running away? They all knew. It was pre-arranged. And assassinator himself was assassinated live, and all the cameras are, you know, right there to shoot the killing pictures. Did you see that CNN itself knew when September 11 is going to happen, and they were targeting the cameras were right on the focus where the plane will come and hit. And the CIA say, we got the warning well before. And what did they do? They never took any precautions. Because there is a big oil embargo, big profitable thing that is coming up by raising prices for a gallon about $4 in America. Oh, wow. And it's still hanging around at $3.50. Still. It may be a little cheaper than here, but then you can imagine. How are they managing the lives of others that they are supposed to protect in first place? It's not only protection. Srimad Bhagavatam tells that the king has the duty to provide proper atmosphere by which all the living entities will get the benefit to raise their consciousness and remain subordinate to the desire of the Lord, so they can go back home, back to God. Do you think you can anticipate anything good from your government? They will give you promise to get the vote, but have anybody ever fulfilled the promise? Pie in the sky. So we have to create our own future. Man is the architect of his own future. If he gets proper guided understanding, he will make a successful life. A successful life does not depend upon our imperfect senses. These kind of conspiracies are throwing dust in the eyes right in the daytime. If somebody is ignorant, you know, well and fine, but they state the whole programs. So always try to check out. 2-3 times, get the verification. Right now, there is another conspiracy going on, do you know? And that experiment already started last week. Super Collider. Big, you know that?
Big Bang.
Big Bang, huh? Where, do you hear anything? Where are they now? What is happening? They will still rely upon computer generated data, which is virtual reality, not actual reality. means again there will be some cheating. They want to track God particle. So they created a 25-mile radius super collider with super magnet, and last week they switched it on. And they say it is going to get little warm up, and then we will see. And there are 2,400 scientists involved from throughout the world. Out of that, there are about more than a couple of hundred from India. So there is an Indian connection to this super collider which has been built between the boundary of France and Switzerland. You'll be surprised that they want to capture the God particle and imprison him. They call it antiparticular theory, which they already got the Nobel Prize in 1959. Then after that there was one well-known super collider constructed south of Dallas, Texas. It's about 50 kilometers from Dallas. It was a 10-mile radius super collider. But unfortunately they had to abandon it because it did not yield any success. So after those many years, they are still after God particle. And they want to capture during this attempt, they hope. Can you imagine where the economy is going to move, in whose hand, and who is going to benefit? For this, producing the big rockets and others, what was the net profit? $9 billion went into private hands. That they were supported by the NASA people themselves. So, and $134 billion what they can have done. But it's smoked out for nobody's benefit. It's so funny that nobody really went more than 500 miles above the earth. Nobody went. They are not going even. It is. The world is strange. Don't depend upon it. You have to depend upon your own intellectual upbringing, but intellectual to discern between the fact or factual absolute truth and relative truth or totally untrue thing. It depends upon only Krishna consciousness. Krishna says, then, sarvasya chaham hrida sannivistam matta smritir gnana pohanam cha. I am sitting in everyone's heart as Paramatma, right? And through me, knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness comes. Through me. So, Krishna provides what you want, he will give. These scientists want to forget Krishna. So, Krishna provides them this opportunity. And they bewilder those who are also wanting to forget Krishna. They want to drive madly after so-called scientific achievement. Whether the science is really making our lives easier or more complicated, they do not know. So foolish people can be easily be duped, be fooled. But that's what Kali has a function to do. He is making all these agents of conspiracies. They are his agents. So, Srila Prabhupada said, this world is not for a gentleman. Gentlemen should make out the best so he can get out from this world for once and all. All of you have worked so hard to get admission. It was not easy, isn't it? What will happen in next life when you will be born again as human being, if at all, and then again go through the grilling, competitive nature of your education? Do you want to come again and get it repeated? Would you want to prefer? It is completely, irrational to think even. There is no rationality. Don't think that the next life will be better than this life. Can't take chance. Whoever you are, you will have this life to live, but to live in consciousness of reality rather than temporality or fantasy or this or that. Really, you don't like to be cheated. Everybody will cheat. Even there are religions that they cheat. But Srimad Bhagavatam will tell you that in Srimad Bhagavatam, all cheating religions have been kicked out. Dharma projita kaita vatra parmo nirmat saranam saranam. So, our reality begins. That is the purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam. And all the cheating religions are kicked out. And only that is of eternal value. Our factual value, factual realization is being taught here. And that is the nature of transcendence and eternal, not of this particular temporary body, more of goodness, passion and ignorance. Forget it. Goodness is very little left in this Kali Yuga. Mostly it is passion and ignorance, which is nothing but painful experiences. Who got pleasure out of this, space, race? Nobody. It's a destructive thing. There could have been more constructive in the values of the life, so people would have better health. What they are making is worse of the health. About 6 years back, America started a program of what they call celibacy. They were giving grants that come and teach us, celibacy. But now they say it failed. Even teachings of celibacy will not work, because on other behalf there are vested interests that they want to promote their products. But right from the form, I think 4, they will start distributing free and entice people. So people of short intelligence, they think this is happiness, but actually this is the breeding ground of pain. That's what Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita. Yehi sansparshaja bhoga dukkha yonaya evate adyantavanta kaunte nate ramate shubhata. Those who are intelligent people, they do not dwell in this subject matter that are the breeding ground of pain. Sense gratification is itself the breeding ground of the pain. And yet, we are dragged into it. So better be disciplined, controlled, so all the functionality of your life will be fulfilled. Otherwise, giving some importance to something so a filial or very popular, very attractive, enticing, sense, if we disproportionately use it, then we are at the loss rather than gain. So, thank you. Any questions? Who still believes that they have gone on moon? Raise your hand. Who is abstained? And who is saying no, they will never go on moon? Well,
really doesn't matter whether they have been there or not. It's just like, I don't care.
Why? Because it is not affecting you?
In some sense, it doesn't matter.
Humanity is affected, didn't you see?
Lot of money have been wasted, all taxes.
But at the same time, they created a worse competition now. It does matter. Your existence is almost at the age of non-existence. It does matter. Probably you don't realize, but it does matter. It affects you. If it affects the humanity, aren't you a human being? You are included in humanity. But at least, because it is going to affect you, better prepare in such a way that it will really not affect you. And you will become indifferent in reality. Without preparing yourself to become indifferent, it will affect you a lot. But to prepare ourselves for remaining indifferent, Krishna consciousness is required. Most of the people, they think that unless and until water comes to my foot, I will not raise it. In, I think, 1975, when Srila Prabhupada came here, he was giving lecture in Melbourne. And because our sea is pretty near, Prabhupada said, don't underestimate Mother Nature. She can, take care of herself. Even however pollution and imbalance you create. One tsunami comes, a big wave will come and it will drown the entire Melbourne. Don't underestimate the power of nature. It does. These inflictions are there because there is gross karma will be there. National karma will involve you. People, they inherently know that will be affected. So they are trying to thwart any attempt, not to switch on, right? So, but the point is that it is a threat, and the threat is real. So it does matter. You don't say threat is not real, And September 11 showed them that even though they knew the threat is there, they were not prepared. However arsenal they had at their command that they could have wiped out, but they cannot. And the whole disaster happened with simple and little knife's edge. They hijacked the plane and smashed the plane. They were so daring to go even to Pentagon and smash it. Say, oh, it is very bad. It's very bad. No, everything is in perfect order. When we are in Krishna consciousness, we are in favor of Krishna. Means Krishna says, I'm not creating the piety or impiety. It's the activities of humans that create. So they are supposed to suffer or enjoy. I'm only concerned with the love and devotion. It is neither pious activity nor impious activity. It is beyond that. That is Krishna's thing. So that is indifference. That's really doesn't matter. If you please Krishna, then come hell or high water. You are not afraid. But this is affecting. Probably people will be, what is there, Krishna? Let me try to make my life as much as. Let me try to squeeze each and every drop of pleasure available, because after all, tomorrow, who knows? But that is miserliness. That is called miserliness. Because without Krishna, nobody can become happy. Even though he may provide you all the amenities, but you see, nobody can become happy. It's a pie in the sky. When the happiness is within you, it is your constitutional position. Why do you depend upon somebody else to make you happy? Material nature is supposed to grind you fine, not to make you happy. Therefore, Lord Shiva, Durga, the whole family has Trishul. Stapatraya, Tinshul. Shul means inflicting pain. Adhyatmik, Adhivodik, and Adhidevik. She is the custodian of Mother Nature. She is personified Mother Nature. So you better believe why she is there. Why she is holding Trishul. Why Lord Shiva has Trishul. The whole family carries Trishul. You will say, BJP is also carrying Trishul. But they can't fight with Trishul. They can't protect bullets.
Maharaj, I have a question. The individual karma is different, and how it contributes to the national or the international karma, so things and all.
If somebody can think on behalf of you, then you are under an order, is it not? Suppose this nation goes on war. When we went to America in early 70s, 1971, there was a draft system. Whoever immigrant comes, whether he's citizen or not, but with a green card, we were everyone supposed to go and register ourselves in the draft. Because Vietnam War was going on. Right? So, why you are going to be subjugated? You have nothing to do. You didn't earn even a dollar there yet, and yet you had to register for draft because it's a compulsory draft system. But of course, we went with the letter of ISKCON, and we were proud. And our religion does not permit us to bear the arms on the whims of government, and we were proud. Otherwise, we had to go and produce the letter. So, we were saved. Many Indians were recruited in the army. They came to make their life in America and ended up in the army. Whose karma is it? Yeah. When the nation goes on war, it is a national karma coming up. Collective karma. Okay, thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Jai.